Yo, and welcome back, everyone out there in the whole entire world. Even if you're not, you know, even if you haven't been to this show before, welcome. Come on in. Take a seat. Sit down next to us. Listen to us talk. Have a good time. Welcome to the Carolyn and Joe Show. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
Hey, and that's basically how this team goes. We are comic book duo. We do a podcast. We do basically as much as we can to entertain you every single day. And this is just another addition to our gifts that we're trying to do for you. And here we have Carolyn. How's it going, Carolyn? You doing well?
Going good.
It's been pretty crazy. We just got back from Small Press Expo, which was absolutely massive.
Yeah, they broke attendance records on Saturday,
yeah,
so I heard.
It's pretty insane. You know, they even had, like, Full Sanction was recording their show live there, live at the Small Press Expo. It's freaking blowing up. I feel like we've gone to two shows now. Baltimore Comic Con, which was just as, like, the biggest show Baltimore Comic Con has ever had, right?
Yes.
And then we just got back from Small Press Expo, which was the biggest Small Press Expo that, like, to me, I feel like something's on the rise. Something
Second
is about
recession.
Yeah, something is about to blow up, and I feel
it's
like we might be like riding like this wave of something awesome is coming together. Like the end of the world isn't gonna die with a whimper. It's gonna be an explosion.
Now, here's a question for you: with social media and the computer and stuff. I mean, the internet's been around for a while now.
Wait, just before you go into that, do we have anything that people should pay attention to? What's next? What's coming up next? We have Intervention that's coming up. Basically this week, right?
But before that, there is the Jellyvision show.
Yeah, Jellyvision.
Thursday.
So hopefully they can listen. If they listen to this before Thursday, they'd be able to catch us on Jellyvision. Where can they find that?
Well, we'll be recording live at the Soundry in Vienna, Virginia. I think the recording time is like at 7 p.m., if I believe so.
Yeah.
You can always check curls-studio.com for all of the updated information, so you can see us live at the Soundry Thursday.
You know, I'm gonna try my hardest to make the Jellyvision, because that's like film too, right?
I believe it is. You can watch it on the internet.
Yeah,
live stream it.
I'm sort of a press hog. I sort of like doing press. It's sort of one of my things.
Live stream. I've never actually been on live stream.
It's pretty amazing, I guess.
Have you been on it?
We're live right now, so.
Yeah, but not live stream. Have you been on live stream?
Ah, beats me. I think every single moment of the day is a live moment, so I always have that.
What if you live stream your life and it was like the Truman Show?
Well, it's sort of like how I feel like even, that's sort of how I was trained, even when I was doing like NWA back in the day with the wrestling. Like, we always tried to treat everything as a live moment, and that's something I've always had to my heart. Whenever you're being watched, whenever the camera is rolling, it's like you can't waste that opportunity. Whenever you're being recorded, why not put you have to be on, and that's something I've always took.
Dude, we are totally being watched, because somebody wrote on our Facebook page. We have a Curl Studio Facebook page, and like somebody wrote, "I saw you guys in the parking lot," like under my SPX.
Oh, thing. Really? Yeah, we're being hunted.
It was like they only saw us in the parking lot though.
That's pretty crazy.
I saw you guys in the parking lot.
Who's you guys? Is it both of us? Like both of us in the parking lot?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely being watched.
So that just shows you, we weren't even actually inside the venue.
We're like, we see you.
It's crazy.
So maybe that's what's going to happen. But yeah, like, I always thought, like, I don't know, maybe people might think I'm some sort of, like, press hog or whatever. Like, but at the end of the day, I always have that sort of Hitchcock. It's one of those lessons I learned from Hitchcock, or I was told from you from Hitchcock.
From directly from him.
Yeah.
When did he die?
I don't know, maybe in the 80s or something like that.
Well, then he could have maybe directly told you.
But it was
when you're in your crib.
But it was always sort of an idea of like, you
listen,
know,
kid.
You always, a lot of people are like, oh, you really promote and stuff like that. But I was sort of, I was always brought up, one, that whenever a camera's on or whenever you have an opportunity to present yourself, like every moment is like the first time that someone could experience you. So you always have to like grab that moment and always be live. You know what I mean? Like, it's really important to be like live, and like I try to be there. And also with the Hitchcock thing is like, well, you got to promote yourself. If you don't do it, then who is? You know what I mean? I've always taken those. You were always talking about your stuff. You're always getting out there. But you know, I try not to. Like, I try not to make it obvious. But it's also like, well, apparently a million other people aren't. So
like,
I might as well do it.
Why would you? This question was like kind of prefaced at the University of Maryland last Friday.
That's right. You did a talk as well. You had the panel at University of Maryland, the first time ever that I've been to that campus, and SPX right after that.
Yeah.
Action packed.
That was pretty action packed. Still in recovery. But on Friday, okay, who was there? Jim Rugg and Monica Gallagher and Rob Ullman.
Rob Ullman, also the guy who does the Kid Beowulf, right?
And Kid Beowulf, which I actually don't know how to pronounce his name, but his book is Kid Beowulf.
Yeah.
And we had a panel at University of Maryland, and that was pretty good, man. I think I learned the most from the other creators that were up on the panel. But somebody asked a question of, like, do you create for yourself or do you create for others? And basically, you know, I really do feel like if you're making it, you are, like, if you're putting it out there, you're making it for everyone else, too. So it's like, why would I not promote it? Why would I make a comic or something and then, like, not, like, put it online?
Well,
or something.
That was based off of that.
This is only going to exist in my basement.
But that was also based off of that. That was based off of that question from David Messicelli and Dash Shaw. Dash Shaw, which we know, a person that we know.
I actually know him.
And I'm a big fan of David's work a whole lot. And Dash took that side of, like, well, I just make it for myself, or I don't care if anyone likes it. And David took it, like, you got to take the audience in consideration. And, you know, for me, I always, I don't know, I feel like I work better when the moment is on and there is an audience.
But also it's like, why would you have a publishing deal if you're only creating it for yourself?
Yeah, one side of me is saying,
that makes no sense to me.
But see, part of it does make sense. Like, the whole part of the answer that Dash said makes sense to me.
I mean,
not the honest
one
part.
One part of it.
The not the words, but why it was said. And it's clearly to be hardcore. Because see, you know what? When you are underground like that, right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of like you want to have that, like, rebellionness of it. You know, I'm like, oh, I don't care. Of course, if you already have it being distributed, you know what I mean? It's so obvious. I don't know. That's how I feel. It's like almost like a gimmick in a way.
Well, my answer at University of Maryland, which hopefully we'll maybe have audio up or some type of video, because they did film it from the back of the room, I noticed. Pay attention at curls-studio.com for info, if we ever put it up. But hopefully somebody filmed part of it. Basically, my answer was like, well, anything you create is going to be an extension of you. Like, I don't know the exact percentage, but for me, I would say it was like 10 to 15%. Because, like, you are making it out of your own mind, out of your own body, your own hand is drawing it, and your own vision is being made. And, like, you're basically working from a white piece of paper onto nothing and creating something from nothing. And, like, you can't say that, like, you're not creating it, you know? First of all, so, like, it is, like, in certain contexts, I do agree that you are making it for yourself, because obviously you're taking the time to make it. But then also it's like, well, if you're putting it out there, then that's saying that you want to share it with other people. Like, for example, let's use this analogy of, like, stupid Facebook. If there, say you have a, like, you know, photos you want to put on Facebook, but then some people might, like, alter it and be like, no, you know, I'm not going to put this photo on Facebook. For example, like, you know, say you went to the beach and you have bikini photos of yourself. I'm like, you know, some people do put up their beach photos, but, like, I don't really think that I should, you know? So it's kind of like, well, I'm not going to put that up there. For me, that's a photo for me. Like, I basically created that photo for myself.
Yeah.
So basically, I will keep that in my own personal, like, vacation album, but I'm not going to put that up on, like, on the internet for everyone to see. Not that I look bad in a bikini or anything, but it's just that, like, I want to be professional online, so I don't really want to put that up. And but at the same time, it's like, well, why, if you can draw comics for yourself, maybe you're still, like, training or something, and maybe you don't think it's as good as you want it to be or something like that. Like, that, you're still maybe, like, at a you know, investigative, like, exploring comics level. And that, I can see how maybe you don't want to put that up yet. You're still making it for yourself. But, like, if you're putting your book out there and, like, being published even, then that's almost like, well, you can't say you're making it for yourself if, like, several other people are buying it, like at a bookstore. So like that, I don't understand that part of it.
Like in short, my philosophy has always been like, don't put it out there if you don't want people to see it.
Yeah, that's like, it's like the bikini photo or like whatever, you know, like any, I don't know. Anything. I guess other people have like drunk photos or this or that.
But literally,
it's
like
some anything. People might want other people to see that. But like there are embarrassing photos of people maybe like in college, you know, or whatever. I don't even know what I have. I don't think I have much, but it's like, you know, or even like somebody might think that they look ugly in a photo. They're not going to put that photo up on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, like, or it might be an unattractive picture where you're talking and somebody took a picture of you and you're like, I'm talking.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, even if you're a gorgeous person, that happens to people, you know, just, or it's blurry or something. I don't know. I'm just saying that, like, there's like certain things you want to put out, there's certain things you don't want to put out. But if you're putting stuff out there, you want other people to be able to experience it and to enjoy it too.
Yeah, literally. If you're releasing anything,
yeah, that's music or movie,
but see, that's
anything.
But that's my theory behind that is, I, you know, like people who say like, oh, I don't care if people like it or not. Maybe he is just trying to. Maybe people just do want to just get it out there and they don't care, and they just want to see what happens. That's my only theory is like, maybe you might not care what the audience feels, but you do want people to read it. But you don't care. I feel like maybe like in that perspective, it's like those artists who don't care.
But like, do they Google themselves?
I mean, everyone Googles themselves. But I feel like there's people who say like, I don't care what the readers think. I feel like they still want them to read it though. But they just, at the end of the day, it's like out of their hands. Like sometimes, like when I release stuff, you know, mentally I'm just like, it's out. It literally is. Once it's out of your hands, you really can't do anything about it. Like, people can hate it or they like it, but you have no, like, you have no control. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there is a point where you just have no, like a lot of times, even, like, I forget, like, which artist, or, I was reading an interview with Dr. Dre. It's like, he really doesn't listen to his album after it's been released. He's like, it's out of my hands now. It's not even mine. It's just like, once I put it out there, it's like, yeah, I can read the reviews or I can see if people are like listening to it, but it's like, I don't even need to. It's basically a gift that you give people. And I understand that perspective. It's like, oh, I don't like, you don't care about it.
Have you ever made something and then like regretted it later?
Yeah, a whole bunch of stuff.
Like, do you have anyone in particular, if you had to pick one?
I mean,
you're like, really, oh man, I can't believe I made that and showed everybody that.
Yeah, there's probably like, I mean, like there's things where I feel like, I don't think I've put out anything really that I'm just like, oh, this should have never gotten out. I mean, there have been like maybe Twitter posts or quotes or stuff like that where I've like deleted because I'm like, crap, that was bad, you know? But either way, like if it's like a piece of work, there's always that room I feel that it could have been better. But there's also that time where you're like, all right, but it could be better. But at the same time, I need to freaking move on.
Yeah.
You know, there's that
or
there's
like,
that
like
moment.
Or, like, you can redraw a comic strip, like, 20 times, like, the same exact one.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like, well, which one is best?
And also,
like, they
yeah.
could all look, like, relatively the same.
Yeah, like, specifically in this day and age, there's so many things that are happening to pieces of work that really easily a mistake. Like, even, like, you have the Instamatic, like, camera or any iPhone app where people are taking photos now, and they're, like, you know, they're obviously there to emulate the mistakes or like the worn down look
yeah.
of things.
The so, hipstamatic.
Yeah, the hipstamatic. Whatever. I don't use that. I'm a real
you're
photographer.
Such a hipster.
But it's like those. It's like now like these mistakes are styles and they're being embraced. So at this point, if you put out anything, people could translate it a total new different way than you thought, or they could like the mistakes. Like with Jack White, and like the way I like his recordings is because they keep in the organic mistakes because that's what adds the soul.
Yeah, like for me, the more I think about it, most of the time, a lot of the mistakes actually what makes things beautiful.
Yeah.
So if you didn't have that, everything would be like flawless, which, you know, that I guess that's everyone's perfect goal is to, you know, the ultimate goal for some people is to like be perfect. But once you let go of that notion, it starts to feel a little bit better and you can see what makes you unique individually.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have like a beauty queen and like, you know, she's perfectly flawless. But let's say like there's the same exact girl, but her smile's like a little bit crooked. Like she has like the pirate smile.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Just like that girl
and
on
Mad
Men.
Character.
Like the
girl?
The one that John Hamm, not John Hamm, but
the one with the messed up teeth.
Yeah. It's like they're like, oh, remember she brought that up. She's like, oh, everything's perfect. Then she's like, except for my teeth. Like when she said like she was trying to model. But they're like, oh, we don't like your teeth or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, like her teeth aren't the greatest, but they're not horrible, you know. But they are kind of like, I guess she's kind of like gapish or something. But like in between several teeth.
You know, and there's I know plenty of girls who have gaps in their teeth and stuff like that. It all depends on how you work it, you know. Like Madonna has a gap in her teeth, and
She's known for it.
Yeah, so
Elton John, right?
So really, like the mistakes that people make is actually what could cause growth. At the same time, an acceptance in a way of a different look.
Even Lady Gaga, sometimes I feel like she's not, you know, she's not like, I'm completely flawless. You know, she even like tries to point out all the different things she can do with her look that makes her actually like supposedly unattractive.
Like,
but then she makes it look good.
But like really at the end of the day, my belief is that there is no, like, yeah, that the level of perfection on a person's perspective is totally subjective. Like, there's no way to, like, what is the perfect girl? Some people say, like, oh, Megan Fox is the perfect girl. Then they're like, oh, but look at her thumbs.
Yeah, you know? Already talked like, about that in a previous episode. Yes.
Oh, sorry.
No, we did. I'm just saying,
I know.
You can go back
I know,
in the archives.
But I know. I'm just saying it as But what I'm trying to say is that, like, there is no level of perfection. You know, the flaws are actually the perfection that, The sporadic, like the memories actually I think are more important than the actual structure of things, because that's like really where it comes from. That's why I listen to like movie commentary. It's like after I listen to awesome commentary, then and I hear like the experience behind like a scene or why an idea came from there. That's why it builds up like a moment, and I think that's what's really important too. Is like what you remember off of these, what you remember when you see things. It's like I specifically have like fond memories of when I watch Batman, you know what I mean? Like Batman animated series, of like how that impacted things, or reading like the Long Halloween like every single month, like for 13 months for a whole entire year. And I remember that year coinciding with that, like, oh, it's not a perfect book, but I have a memory. That's why it's hard for me to personally to criticize anyone's taste, like in music or with movies. Like, I really actually feel bad when I'm like, oh, you like that movie? I try my hardest to not even say that. Like, oh, you like, Geely? That's a lame-ass movie. And they're like, well, that was my, you know, there's a memory behind that. And it's behind everything, actually. Then some are good and some are bad. And sometimes the good memories don't coincide with the subjectively what's perfect art, you know? It's like, you know, I don't know. Again, with the Spider-Man 3 thing, it's like, well, I had a good memory. That felt good. It was like closure. People will slam on that movie because everyone's on that stupid-ass search for perfection. I believe that search for perfection is like such a... It's like searching for fool's gold, you know? Because you're never gonna... No one's ever gonna go perfection. If once you embrace just the fact of, like, life is gonna hit you no matter what. Like, you know what I mean? It's things will just happen. And you gotta be there ready to accept it. I mean, searching for perfection. That's why perfectionism is sort of, it's retarded in a way.
But still, in general, like, everyone does search for it, even you, you know, even though I know you're talking against searching for perfection, but, like, you always try to make things the right way.
Yeah, you know? I mean, there's
a certain level where you reach, like, a...
But
like,
I'm talking about
near
material...
I guess all I was saying is, like, near perfection, like, you're kind of near the top of the mountain where it's snowing. You know, so like you're climbing it and you're like, okay, this is a snowy area. That means we have achieved the goal. But then, like, you know, getting to the very tip, there is almost like no way to actually make anything perfect, because there's going to be one person out there that will be like, what? You used green? I thought you were going to use blue.
Well, that's,
you know?
And but that's what I say. It's all memory based. It's all about like how your memory and how you feel at that moment. Like, I feel like a person's search for perfection should also, in a sense, collide with the world's level of perfection, with the universe's perfection on, like, the perfect moment on you. You know, it's like you could have, you know, you'd made the perfect painting. Boom, it rains. Like, was that perfect? In a way, it's like, you can't search for perfection. Perfection is already there. You
the timing.
You have to be available to accept to find it. You
the
know what I mean?
The planets align.
Well, you know, but it's, I always just feel like everything is there. Like there's perfection everywhere, but also perfection is based on perspective. You know, it's like when you see like, you know, someone looks at like a warehouse and it's all messy. And people are like, oh, it's so dirty here, blah, 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 blah. You know, that's horrible. Then they're like, we need to do something. Well, this is horrible. Then you see someone else who walks in, he's trying to do a photo shoot or something. They're like, this is perfect. You know, we need this. This is going to juxtapose like what we're trying to shoot here. Like, that's perfect. Like, actually, that, like, the equinox is perfect. That balance is perfect. Like, you can't have perfect beauty without the opposite. I mean, that's my philosophy on that. It's like, well, it's almost like sometimes, like, when you have, like, when I've seen, it's like, oh, you have the super hot girl or something like that, or hot guy, or whatever place you live in this world. It's like, you have that, but it's also like, what's the balance? What's causing this balance? It's like, oh, because if you're all hot, you know, you're all, you know, like, beautiful on one side, then what's balancing that with the ugly? You know what I mean? I always think there's something there. It's like, oh, or she has a really horrible parents, and that's why she has to look her best all the time. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's how it is. Oh, or a person's like, oh, I'm super rich. It's like, okay, but you have no want. You know, like, I think that's where the balance is, like, in the universe, in the world. That's really how it comes together. But what was the question of, like, if they, you know, what do they care if people like it or not? I always, like, to me, I do care if people like a piece of work that I like or not. I actually feel like I want to take it to the next level, and I want people to be inspired by what I do. You know, it's like, why stop there? You can like it. It's just like, oh, I love this sandwich. But I would rather want someone to, I would rather be inspired by the sandwich, you know, and be like, oh, this is so good. I want to learn how they freaking made it. That's the level I want. And that's how I look at like things so, like, I enjoy.
An emulating level.
Like just almost or like
an inspirational.
Yeah. Level. Like you're inspired. Like you just all of a sudden have this utopia of like, I can't even believe they actually made this sandwich. This is so good. I need to freaking make this for myself so I can always have it. Like I've looked at that ever. Like that's the only things that I'm a fan of. Like I have to look at a piece of work, and I'm not like 75% or anything like that. I have to be that 200% towards a piece of work. Like say like when I saw like when I read like Frank Miller's stuff when he was doing Sid City in the beginning, it's like I didn't even know there were rules to break. You know, I thought it was just standard like oh superhero stuff, and I got inspired by that because I was like, man, imagine no rules and you get to do stuff and you have like you're starting a revolution. Like, the pieces of work I love are the ones that have inspired me to do that. I can't just, like, oh, yeah. Like, I don't really like it if it's just, I mean, it's okay, but I wouldn't buy it if it's just a work that's just like, oh, you know, I guess that's solid. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, it has to be 200%.
It has to be absolutely 200%. And, like, I probably, like, annoy people, like, to the heavens. And also, for me to be inspired, like, you know, it has to come... You know, it has to hit me, like, in the right spot. It's not just, like, I'm going to watch this awesome, amazing... Everyone says it's a perfect movie, and I'm going to watch it and be inspired. I'm inspired by, like, weird, amazing moments. You know, like, I'm inspired by, like, that moment in No Country for Old Men. Where, in the beginning, Anton Chigurh. When Anton Chigurh first comes into that office, and they crumple that piece of paper... And they put it on the desk, and all of a sudden it opens up in slow motion. Like, not in slow motion, but it looks like it's in like it just unfolds. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I didn't know you can do that. You know what I mean? I didn't know, like, holy shit, they actually shot that. And that's like this cinematic moment of like watching this piece of paper, like, you know, in the
How
middle
did they
of this tense.
That?
They just did it. They just crumpled the paper. All right, film it. It's like, does someone have the balls to do that? That's why I was like, when Frank Miller was doing these things, I was like, damn, someone had the balls to do that. That's fucking inspiring. You know what I mean? Like, that's, like, when you were talking about this at your talk, the white on white, like, to see that, you're like, that's freaking ridiculous. But the fact that the action of someone presenting that as a piece has balls enough to inspire you to be like, well, I guess that means there's no rules, man. You know? That, to me, is awesome.
Yeah. I want to research that because I actually want to do a few strips based off of that. But for me, like, it's amazing also to know that these creations, it's just like, they just went and did it, you know? Like, to me, it's basically like a miracle that anything is getting done. sometimes, especially like I guess on a corporate level, like being like a I wouldn't call myself a corporate designer in my day job, but like, you know, you're dealing
with it's an industrial,
or like let's say it is commercial design.
Yeah.
Like basically, like there are so many people you have to make happy, like, you know, speaking of perfection, like there is like there are certain companies you might work for where it is seriously getting passed around. It is, I've had my stuff go to focus groups, and like it, like that, like on one hand of things I'm like, oh, that's good, they actually care what the public cares about, you know, they want to get like, I guess these strangers come in a room and focus group design, you yeah. know, like who knows who these people are, it's basically like picking a jury or something,
basically, and like, basically just ruining the singular direction of things.
Oh, yeah, or it's like, but I didn't know that those people are the client, you know. Yeah. Like, and then but then it's like, you know, who knows what they're gonna say, but on one hand of it, like I'm kind of stuck in the middle, because on one hand I'm like, oh, that's good, because then that's like the general public and see what people that aren't even involved in with the project can get an outside viewpoint of it, and then on the other hand I'm like, oh no, they're gonna ruin everything.
Yeah.
You know, like because they're not involved in the project at all, and they're not gonna know certain things. And but then at the same time, if you really think about it, those are the type of people that are gonna look at it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's like I feel stuck in the middle about that, but it's like it is pretty intense, because like basically what I'm saying is that as a commercial designer, from that aspect, it is like a freaking miracle that anything is made. And on top of that, if something is made that looks phenomenal, like 200%, like you're talking about, then that is even like more amazing. Like to get,
like that they can get away with that.
To,
you know,
get,
that's
like
you're getting something.
Approval of like all of these people, and it's like the pyramid scheme of people up in the organization.
Yeah.
You know, like the organizational chart with everybody on top and everybody approval process. It's just like freaking ridiculous. Like, even when people argue over a comma, you know, it's like, it's
yeah.
like, should this comma be in here? I don't know. Ah, oh, let's look at the AP style guide. You know, it's
yeah.
it's like, I mean, that's not really design related, but still, stuff like that, sometimes, like, actual projects get down to stuff like that, and it gets to be sort of nitpicky, you know? But basically, when you see a good design project or a good film or a good anything that has to do with a team with, like, you know, several people working on something, and you see something that blows your mind away, then that should be commended, because it is intense to, like, do something like that for that many people.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, you know how I said earlier, is there one project that you've done before that you would regret, or, like, you feel like you want to redo it? Like, for me, like, I don't necessarily say I will regret this, but my mindset has changed in a project that I did previously.
Yeah.
Like, there's a comic strip I did back after 9/11, and like basically I remember the Dixie Chicks, the country music, like threesome, the Dixie Chicks, they basically were saying, we're ashamed that George W. Bush is from Texas, and they made comments about like America. And they were one of the first people to have the viewpoint of, like, this war is stupid type ordeal.
Besides System of a Down.
Well, there were other people that had this viewpoint, but they were one of the first vocal people to say this. And, like, at that time, I personally was pro-American, and I still am pro-America, but I'm saying, like, at that time, I supported the war. Like, I thought, you know, we need to defend ourselves and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm still kind of, like, feeling that same way as well. But then at the same time, I'm like, well, we haven't really progressed. What are we doing there now? Like,
yeah.
Maybe we can find a way to back out a little bit, you know? But, like, the funny thing is about that is at that time, right after September 11th, for that whole following 2 years, people had American flag stuff all over their car. They're all decked out, all patriotic. Everyone was like, really, like, go America, Team
yeah,
America,
you know?
You know?
Yeah, and we just celebrated the 10-year, or not celebrate, but remembered the 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, commemorated.
Yeah.
But it's like,
With coins and plates.
Yeah, and sterling silver.
Yeah.
But basically what I'm saying is that at that time, like, there was a moment where, like, people were really against the Dixie Chicks. People were burning their CDs. Remember that?
What year was this? Was this 2002 or something? 2003? During that time?
Yeah, around that time.
And this is, like, country music. Country music usually is a heartland of America type feel.
And really, like, a lot of people in country music, a lot of even the themes of some country music is, like, very, like, pro-American. Like, Toby Keith was actually the person that went against the Dixie Chicks.
Yeah.
And they had, like, battles.
And that's like Mr. Pickup Truck.
Yeah, he's, like... He's all pro America.
My,
like,
American flag. So
you know, but he's like, you know, he's like, you got to work hard for your country and, you know, defend our nation.
That's the equinox. That's where the balance comes in. So these girls.
But see, I never like hate the Dixie Chicks, and I never would burn their album. I never got
it's
to
a waste
that
of money,
level.
Man. You know.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you like their music, then that's great. Then why are you going to burn their album? You know, but let's just say at one point, do you remember when the Dixie Chicks were really big?
Yeah.
Like, they were winning Grammys. They were huge. They were on, like, all these magazine covers. There was a probably 3-year time with the Wide Open Spaces.
Yeah, they're on top.
They were, like, freaking on top, man. They were winning awards. They're all over the place. Then, like, I don't know the timeline, but a few years later, after one remark that, like, Natalie Maine said, and all she really said is that we're ashamed George W. Bush is from America, he's from Texas, or whatever, you know? Like, that was pretty much most of the quote. Like, now you think about it, that quote wasn't that bad, and it got, like, blown up, and I don't know, like, I think that someone took it way far, and I think the reason why is because they were the first people to say that. Just like how...
In such an open... Because it's not the first ones, but they were in their platform...
I believe
they had a bigger platform.
I believe also they were in Europe when they said that.
Really?
I would have to check, but you think they would be safer, right?
Because remember when Jack White said that when he was when they were performing in a, but this is way past them. But he even said
that he wasn't the first. That's the thing. Yeah. He wasn't the first, and Nellie Maines was the first. And
remember Rage Against the Machine though.
Yeah, but that's Rage. You know, like they're like.
That's what
but
I'm
the
saying.
Thing is,
it's
they're
a
accustomed
the different,
to it.
Yeah, there's a
they're
different
platform.
They're
accustomed to it. If the country music person goes that way, even when Shelley Wright said, "Oh, by the way, I'm gay," you know, it was like this big announcement. But it's like, oh my gosh, a gay country singer.
Wait, who's gay?
Shelley Wright.
Do I know Shelley Wright?
She actually is not very prominent anymore in mainstream.
Because
but
she got shoved down.
Well, her biggest song is called Single White Female, her biggest charting song. I actually own that album. But, like, I don't care if she's gay or what. It didn't even actually change for me. Like, I was just like, okay, well, she's gay, so what? You know, like, whatever. I mean, I don't know. It didn't affect me.
It's really a non-factor. I pay attention to the work.
But for country music, it is, you know, like, that's... I don't know why, but it is, you know. And also, you know, a lot of the fans of country music...
Because they're very, like, heartland, you know?
But the fans of country music are very, very good fans of country music.
Because it's almost like, well, you can't be into rock and roll, then you can't be into rap. It's like, well, then the safe way to go would be the country...
I mean, they have some overlap with certain things, but, like, you know, I think the fans are very particular. And also, like, I think more so in country music than any other music... That if you like an artist in country music, you really stick with them. Like a certain artist.
Yeah.
Then you're like, oh, I always like George Strait. Or I always like Reba McEntire.
Yeah.
Like stuff like that. Like those people will stick with that artist.
It's pretty interesting because like back then, I don't know.
That's awesome support though.
But like, you know, like back then, what was that? Like 2002 or 2003 or something like that?
Yeah.
But it's like they were burning these books or they're burning like their albums.
Burning all the Dixie Chicks stuff.
All the Dixie Chicks stuff. But it's like, in the future, when everything goes digital, how are you going to protest that?
I'm deleting.
Let's do a united delete.
Everybody, at this one moment in time, right now, on whatever date at 6 p.m., everyone's going to delete the Dixie Chicks music.
And then the Equinox.
But you know people are going to back that shit up.
But then the Equinox to that is like, well, then they're going to, other like Dixie Chicks or whoever site, they'll be like, all right, if they're going to delete it, then here, it's available for free on our site. Download it whenever you want. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, okay, this is going to be a weird-ass battle. There's no more... Like, I bet protests are really sort of weird like that now.
Yeah. Back to what I was saying about what I regret is, like, I did a comic strip of Nellie Maines that said, like, I'm ashamed you're from America. And then like, I had Nellie Maines with, like, tape over her face.
Yeah.
And, like, at that time, that is really how I felt. because it was just like combative.
See, that's a memory. It's a memory attached to a perfect moment.
But I remember I actually got heat on that, like on the streets of Richmond from a few people. They're like, how you do that to the Dixie Chicks? That was blah, blah, blah. And actually from my perspective, because I am actually a big proponent of the First Amendment. Like, you know, like I don't want to censor people.
Not the Second Amendment.
Is it the Second Amendment?
No.
Second Amendment's
you're not,
guns,
you're,
right?
You're not a big fan of the Second Amendment.
Did I say First Amendment?
No, you said First.
Okay, the First Amendment, like, I do not want to, like, censor anybody. If that's how they feel, if that's how Nellie Maines felt, then, you know, why should I be censoring her? That's how I feel now about it, you know? Like, I probably would not have drawn that cartoon now, if that were to happen now. And I think also, when I drew that, it was, like, my age, you know? Like, yeah. I that's how I felt when I was younger, but... I mean, right now, like, I probably would not have drawn that, but I guess I don't necessarily regret that, but basically what I'm saying is that at a different time period in my life, I probably would have not made that.
I mean, but that makes sense. It's a recording of time, just like our podcast. It's we probably would have said, wouldn't say things now that we did back and then, or, you know, you sort of, those are recordings of time.
I also got heat from another comic strip. Somebody wrote into letters for the editor when it was published for the comic strip that Greek whatever were they called fraternities were protesting
for campus. that the MTV one,
yeah, somebody wrote in.
And just so you know, guys, you can find these actual curl strips on the at the Curls collection.
Yes, it's in the Curls collection 2002 for 2008.
So you can actually find these controversial comic strips that Carolyn produced during her...
I was more political back then. But basically, like, somebody wrote in about that. I got heat from that. But it's like, I don't know. I don't know, man. Like, the Dixie Chicks thing, the more I think about it, that's pretty effed. Because the funny thing is now everyone agrees with them.
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone...
Trailblazers.
Not everyone, but, like, you know, there was
majority,
a certain time...
Majority
of people... hated George Bush like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted him to get out of the office. They wanted Obama, you know? And it's like, I'm like, I just think that personally, I think that that's very interesting that the Dixie
turning of the tides,
the Dixie Chicks got basically like burned their CDs and country radio stopped playing the Dixie Chicks. At one point, there was a time where like all those Wide Open Spaces songs was being played all the time on the radio.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you'll be lucky if you hear a Dixie Chicks, even now. Like, I don't hear them on the radio anymore, which I think is kind of strange.
Well, didn't they, like I know the
they
recent...
They were all over
but
the
I know the recent
top
work,
40.
The recent work they did is, like, minus somebody, right? They won,
yeah,
won
I think actually
like
the
that?
Nellie Maines it is minus Nellie Maines. It just has the other two
they're
girls,
like,
which I believe are sisters.
They're like, I think we can survive, but we gotta get rid of you.
Well, what is their name, though?
I have no clue. I don't really
I don't think it, like,
I just
charted
know...
very well. And, of course, it didn't get played on the radio.
Well, I don't know what the songs were.
I never heard any of them.
How am I supposed to know if I don't listen to the radio or country music or go to their websites or even know who they are?
I wonder if the Dixie Chicks are even in formation.
That's what I was wondering. I was like, well, maybe they said we'll get more traffic and respect or possibility if we got rid of the Troublemaker one.
No, but they changed their name. The other two, they weren't called Dixie Chicks the album.
They're the Pixie Sticks now?
I don't know what they were. But it's kind of like, I mean, Nellie Maines is vocal, you know? At one point, I'm actually like, I actually respect her if that's how she feels. But I just think it's actually kind of like, I don't know what word to use, hilarious in some weird, twisted way that, like, you know, 10 years ago, they were, like, being burned at the stake, and then now everyone agrees with them. And then they're still not being played on the radio.
Yeah, that's sort of like they just got killed and now
they're
everyone
just
switches.
Dead.
Yeah.
And then, but then everyone agrees with them now? I'm like, that makes no sense, but in some twisted way, it's strange and weird. And I'm kind of interested in it. But you know what would be interesting? If Dixie Chicks actually do make a comeback.
I mean, it's not out of the ordinary. They can team up back with Rick Rubin and let it happen.
And like, I think they could.
Who knows? They might have already, you know?
I don't. If they did already, we would have heard about it. You mean secretly they're doing it right now?
Something, yeah.
Maybe. But, like, I feel like
because I remember they always got, like, they all got, like, pregnant or something like that. So they took some years off for that.
Maybe that's too. Maybe they're all doing family stuff. I know they got married and maybe divorced or and they got married again. I don't know. There's all three of them and they're all getting married and babies or something was happening. And then they posed for Entertainment Weekly all naked with words all over their body. Remember that?
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. I personally, like,
it became a gimmick. Like,
yeah, they were like, you gimmick. Like, that's, I personally didn't enjoy that too much. Like, from an art perspective, well, first of all, I hate it when, like, clients ask to put keywords on shit. But, like, second of all, like, you know, from, I guess, like, a conceptual way of thinking, I understand that concept for the cover. But I personally don't like love it necessarily. But you know, but
also during that time, that was like during the, like there was a music, I don't know, maybe it was like a 3-year music time where people were really getting, just all about making political statements to the point where like they even told ahead of time Grammy, whoever the or whatever the show was, and they said like, oh, you can do political statements, but you know, tell us ahead of time and we'll just censor it out or something like that, you know?
Yeah, there was a couple, you're right, there's a couple years where the Grammys were very political. Yeah,
but see, like, at that point, I'm like, it's not even, you're not even making a statement. You're just bragging at that point. It's like what the Clash said, you're turning rebellion into money is what they were doing.
That's true.
And that was bullshit. And that was the Clash, 1976.
Yeah, there's something the Dixie Chicks was doing about, I don't know, they're kind of like, from one perspective, I'm like, well, I guess that's what they have to do, because they already, like, dug that hole.
I remember that Grammys, like, everyone had, like, a moment, like a...
They're like, I just want to say...
Bruce Timm, send him home! Like, everyone
Bruce
had a... Not Bruce Timm, but...
Bruce Timm was at the Grammys?
Bruce Springsteen. You know, he was political, but, like, I was like, everyone... Avril Lavigne had this political statement.
But the thing that's messed up about that is that there are troops still over there, and no one says anything about it.
Yeah.
Like, there are freaking guys and women, men and women over there, over wherever they are, all over the world.
Doing what?
Like, working for America. I guess we can put it that broadly. Yeah. They're working for us.
Our own terrorists.
You know.
I'm just playing. Whatever you want to call them.
You know, but they are leaving their family. Think about this.
Yeah.
Think about leaving your family, going to a strange country, Lord knows where the hell it even is, at least from my perspective, and, like, blowing, like, sand up your nose and, like, wherever, and who knows where they even are. Just imagine leaving your family like that. Those people are doing that as their job.
Yeah. So hopefully, America, that you are actually, you know, making it worth their time.
And no one actually...
Hopefully you are America.
No one nowadays is saying bring them home or this and that. And they've been out there for a while. But it's like...
Well, they were announcing that they were bringing a whole bunch home. But then I remember that was followed up by like, oh, we're also sending more out there.
Yeah, see, so this is not really...
That's sort of like the...
There's mission accomplished yet.
That was like during that time where it was like, okay, we'll announce this big news. You know, that was the only time where good news was like the headline and the bad news was like the byline.
Yeah.
Or not the byline,
we're bringing them home. Oh, yeah, we're adding 5,000 troops.
Yeah, we're just refreshing the page.
No, but it's like, that makes no sense. Even Obama was like, he ran on like bringing them home. That was one of his issues. And like, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think that's really happened. He hasn't stopped the war. It's still going.
There needs to be a war somewhere, anyway.
I mean...
My philosophy, that's my thought, is that there needs to be a war.
Like,
people need something to fight for.
But the thing is, there can't be no troops out at all.
Like, never. You gotta regulate. You gotta have presence.
But there should...
Marketing.
But at this point, we need to start bringing some of them over. You know, it's gonna happen gradually. You can't just, like, be like, all right, get the hell out of here.
You know, we're bringing them all home. Yeah, every single one of them is coming home now. Like, how do you do... That would cost so much money, too. I bet that's what placing the factors like, okay, we spent, like, billions of dollars to get them out there. So are you telling me we gotta spend billions of dollars to bring them back? Do we have billions of dollars? Everyone's like, no. No, sir, we don't have that money. It's a marketing and it's a business term, I believe.
It's
sort of like, it's cheaper to keep them there than it is to bring them back.
Perhaps.
You know, then you have all these third-party investors who are bringing in new government, like, weaponry that they need to try out.
Do you want to know who makes the most money in the war? Energy drinks. Energy drinks.
Because
baby.
That's at like Rockstar?
Yes. Energy drinks, and like they have these also. I have them. I haven't tried them yet, but I got this. It's actually like this military capsule. It's chewing gum, but it's called Alert. And it, the cover of it, the packaging, has like camouflage, and it says "Stay Alert" on it. It's freaking genius. In like stencil.
It's such a guaranteed. It's like the military and all that stuff is such a. I feel like it's such a good guaranteed market of like. It's like if you need to go at a certain audience, it's like, well, the military is and the government is a massive audience, and like, you know what I mean? It's already like they're not just going to order 10. They got to get them for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, okay.
Wherever they're ordering their energy drinks from, those companies, seriously, I don't have positive evidence on this, but I seriously think that at least 1/3 of their revenue is coming from the government ordering the drinks for the soldiers.
Yeah,
there.
And it's because just because the how many
and they all get addicted to it.
How many units they sell, you know, just like you know, just like you know how like 50 Cent he made that vitamin water money, you know, they get the mass production of that.
Heck yeah! I mean, I don't.
He's
know
getting 50 Cent getting 50 Cent is getting money from the government.
He's getting 50 cents from each one.
Yeah, he's exactly.
And he's like, that's what my name is about.
Which, not
by,
just
the, by the way, the best flavor of that is the 50 formula, in is my it? Opinion. Yeah, it's like a light purple.
It's been such a long time since I've had that because, like, ever since people were like, "Oh, it has just it's just as bad as Coke," and I was like, "What? Coke is bad?"
Yeah, I mean, there was a time
I hate
where
when people are like, "No, this is bad. Don't drink it."
There was a time where vitamin water was getting like a big push, and they were like, "This is so good for you," and it's like
it tastes good and it's good for you.
And has all these vitamins and stuff in
and
it.
Someone then when had you to look pop at, that bubble.
Then when you look at it, there's actually not as much vitamins as you think. And you're like, oh.
It's just these two vitamins that they have a lot of.
Not even. It's like, I forget the whole thing, but it was like, I was like, this doesn't make sense, like, in the long run.
Yeah.
When you actually read the label.
So,
like, it's not horrible for you, but it's not, like, as good as you think. It's not like this magic water that's, like, all full of vitamins and stuff.
Yeah.
Can't be a substitute for a meal.
So yeah, that's SPX is pretty cool. You know what I mean? Did the talk in Maryland University, SPX up in Bethesda. We have Intervention coming up. New York Comic Con is coming up in next month. But yeah, SPX was packed.
Oh my god, more New York Comic Con is
and
next
also,
month.
And also the news of coming out of this year's Small Press Expo is that next year is going to be 50% bigger.
Crazy.
So that's you know you guys should definitely check this out. It's a show that's getting bigger every single year. You'll most likely find us there and a bunch of other great people. And like you're saying, the work all around is getting better, or they're just letting in better quality.
Dude, people are stepping up their game.
Well, you got to, man, because like we said, this is your opportunity.
Well, I do.
This
remember,
is your live opportunity to show the world what you got.
Now, don't you remember when SPX was at the old venue? We never exhibited at the actual old venue, but I remember seeing a lot more like Kinko's style stuff, basically like quick and dirty. You fold it and staple it, and there's your comic.
Now everything's FedEx Office and.
No, not even FedEx Office, and now everything is like I use this off-press paper, French paper.
Now it's basically it's art school style as opposed to just.
I don't know if it's art school style, but it's like there was some really good.
Like this is like my art project, you know, my real art project.
Each book is like an art book or something, and it's. I mean, I think overall it's like a good thing, you know. But I do like, kind of enjoy some of the like Kinko's style stuff sometimes actually too. But now it's like actually hard to find that stuff. I don't know. Like, I basically think everyone really stepped up. Also, I was talking with Jim about it.
Being online, you have so many opportunities to find places that can print what you want.
I was talking with Jim Kuhn about it, and he mentioned, like, the print-on-demand stuff right now is, like, and digital printing is, like, so big right now, and it's so easy, too. You basically just give someone a PDF and be like, print this, Jinx.
So
it gets mailed directly to your house. You don't even have to leave your house.
So these are the changing of the times, man. It's just that's what's crazy and beautiful about it. Is now you don't have to be limited to that. If you have a little bit of time and you have a little bit of that dough, you can print out that book that you've always wanted to make. You know, it's only going to be as good as you make it because no one else is telling us what to do. You know what I mean? I remember Jim Kuhn, he was telling me about that, or what he's asking me. He was like, so what do you think of
Guggenheim?
Who's the press that we use to print our books, some of our books?
Comics
press. Well, yeah, and they were like, he was like asking, he asked me, so what do you think about that place? And I was like, well, you know, in all truth, it's only going to be as good as we make it, as good as we design it to be.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if we make a mistake, well, they're still going to print it. So I can't blame them for our mistake. And he's like, you know what? I wish I had more people that think just like that. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, my dad was a printer. So we went through this. He'd always tell me about that.
Yeah. I mean, basically give somebody something to print, they just print it. Well, they can't edit it for you. Be like, hey man, you misspelled this word.
So we're going to end this show on this conversation since Jellyvision is coming up. That's always going to be fun. I love doing press. And also, Intervention, 3-day show this weekend.
Three day.
But also, like, I saw the list of the what's going to be happening. Because what is this? Like an on, like,
what, how did that describe it? I have it? Never been to this convention, but it's a it's called Your Life Online Intervention. And basically, they're going to have all different types of things. They are going to have cosplay. They are going to have internet stuff. They're going to have gaming. They're going to have geeky music acts.
But they're also going to have, like, what was it called? Lair? Or LARPing? Yeah.
Wait, what's LARPing?
Whatever the thing, just like in Role Models, a TV show.
Oh, they're going to have that?
That.
Lair? Isn't it called Lair or something?
Something, yeah.
Oh my god, can I play it?
I was like so excited to see that. I was like, holy shit.
I haven't seen that. Intervention's
going to have that. I was like, oh, we got to go. I wanted to tell James about that.
You got
to
get like a sword.
I wanted to tell James about that. I was like, he's going to do this.
You can bring that rain stick.
I was like, it's just going to be freaking awesome, man. I was like so excited when I saw that. I was like, this is going to be the craziest thing ever. Like, so guys, definitely go to Intervention. Go check out all those things. Carolyn and Joe as Curl Studio. Maybe, you know, maybe as the Carolyn and Joe show will be there too. But yeah, LARPing or whatever. I think that's what they call it.
It's just called Lair.
Lair or, yeah, whatever that's represented. It's going to be there. That's going to be the first time I see it in person. And you know what? That's how we're going to end the show.
They're also going to have cosplay burlesque.
Crazy. Think about that. AstraightProductions.com, curls-studio.com. Thank you for listening. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Yeah, without a doubt. We'll see you next Tuesday. Be excellent, stay positive, and live without fear. Back to the Future. See y'all later.